Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
If your small business is booming and ready to expand, you might say something like,
"It's happening!"
Booyah!
Yeah!
Crushed it. But if you need someone who can actually help protect your growing business, just say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And just like that, your State Farm agent can help you get the coverage you need for your new space. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by John Donovan and Longhorn Wealth Management Group. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. Guys, first off, good to see you. Been a while.
our host the last 2 weeks, Mike Monroe, he was all right, but we had to replace him with Blake Monroe.
There you go. Well, we got a lot to talk about. I feel like we got a lot to catch up on, but let's start with, this is the last week coaches can be on the road. Is that correct, Jerry?
This is the spring evaluation period. This will be the last week. Texas will close it out this week. Obviously, that spring evaluation period for high school recruiting began April 15th. Texas coaches didn't get out until the week after the spring game, which that spring game was April 20th. So they've been on the road the entire month of May. Some key visits this week, I believe, for Texas. Kyle Flood scheduled to be up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to see Nick Brooks this week. I'm not sure if that's today or tomorrow. I have to check back in with Nick on that. But that's a big one because Texas has been making up a little ground there since the April 20th spring game. It likely is going to come down to Georgia and Texas unless Iowa can pull off something miraculous. But it just doesn't feel like, from what I'm hearing, that Nick Brooks is going to stay in state and go to Iowa. I know he's a one-time Iowa commitment, but I don't think it's looking good for Iowa right now. Can things change? Sure, but we'll see. But I think Texas has a legit shot there. AJ Milwee, kind of big week on the road there. I mean, he's scheduled to be down in Plantation, Florida, at American Heritage to see Dia Bell, one of the two 2026 quarterback offers, and then out in Mission Hills, or San Marcos, California, Mission Hills to see Troy Hune. This week. So I believe Troy's on the 22nd. And I think Dia Bell's today, maybe tomorrow. Millwell will be going coast to coast this week. And his staff will be on the road, seeing some other targets, making one final look at some 25s, more 26s. I posted some recruiting nuggets at ontexasfootball.com this morning. Also just posted an early look at the Texas Elite Camp June 1 visitor list. We're going to add a lot of names to that. But obviously at the top of that list is Dia Bell and Troy Hune, because which way is Texas going to go at quarterback in 2026? Dia Bell, when I was through there, I guess 2 weeks ago now, almost, Texas was the only visit he had scheduled in June. He's now scheduled LSU for June 13th, 14th, but he will be at the Texas Elite Camp June 1st, as will Troy Hune. I tried to get in touch with Troy Hune. I think he was a little under the weather this weekend. We're supposed to catch up today or tomorrow and see if he's added any other June visits. But, you know, look, both those guys will be at Texas June 1st. And that is the two quarterbacks with offers right now for the Longhorns. So that list of 26 attendees for Elite Camp is going to be a very strong one. Toa Katoa, offensive lineman from Euless Trinity, two from IMG on the offensive line, Brett Colleger and Kenia Pepe. He's a big-time guy. So, I mean, that list is going to come together. Chris Stewart, the receiver from Shadow Creek, told me this morning he'll be there on June 1st. So, the Texas coaches seeing the 25s for the last time, or seeing some of those remaining 25s for the last time, maybe making a few more evaluations, but really seeing some of those 26 kids and trying to get them locked in for that June 1st elite camp or the June 13th, 14th big man camp, which is where, or second camp, which is where some offers have gone out in the past. But that elite camp's the one to watch, Bobby.
This elite camp's the same. And the reason why we're harping on it so much, or you're harping on it so much, Jerry, is because last year this is where KJ Lacy emerged.
Yes.
As the quarterback taking the
20 that weekend. Yep. Class.
And what's interesting there is Keelan Russell. And I want to segue into this. He visited SMU over the weekend, had been committed to SMU for quite some time, continues to be committed. SMU had a big weekend this weekend for the Mustangs.
Biggest weekend since the Pony Express recruiting weekends. I mean, huge recruiting week. I mean, look, Jordan and Devin Coleman, they were on campus. Keelan Russell. I mean, there was a big Smith or Ogbo. I mean, there was a number of guys on campus at SMU this weekend. Look, moving into the ACC, the commitment SMU made to the football program and athletics. I mean, that was a huge recruiting weekend for SMU this past weekend. So how many of those guys will they get? We'll see. Keelan Russell, he goes to Alabama May 31st through June 2nd. I think that is the team to watch. I think SMU has their work cut out for him. He goes to Florida June 7th through 9th. Oregon probably June 21st through 23rd. So we'll see if Texas makes a move there. KJ, they have not offered. KJ Lacy still firmly committed to Texas with Auburn, Oregon, USC, Ole Miss still chasing there somewhat as well. So we'll see if Texas does offer a second quarterback in the 25 class. So far, they have not. AJ Milwee did go see Keelan Russell recently.
Hey guys, one thing, you know, obviously I've been out for a little bit, but it seems like Texas firing on all cylinders right now, yes. Recruiting-wise, lots of momentum going in a positive direction as we head into the summer. Can y'all touch on that a little bit?
Yeah. So
go ahead, Bobby. Let me say something. They are. Jerry, you put out the high yesterday for a player or two that may have committed to the Longhorns over the weekend. Here's the reality of the situation. When you say firing on all cylinders, I don't think it's just football right now. I think it's the entire athletic department. Women's rowing yesterday won the Big 12 championship. That's 15 Big 12 championships out of, I think, 20 sports that the Longhorns participate in their athletic department. 15 out of 20, that's 75%. That's pretty strong. So while we talk a lot about football, and I do, that is the focus, I mean, you had the women's softball team winning their regional. They play, they're in the off to the super regionals, ranked number one still in the country. They play A&M on Thursday. The Texas men's baseball team swept Kansas. Texas One Fund, the NIL arm of the University of Texas, raised multiple millions of dollars on Friday and Saturday through the efforts of the Texas One Fund. Texas lost in the men's national championship in tennis yesterday, 4-3. It was a heartbreaker to TCU. But when we talk about firing on all cylinders, I really think it's the entire athletic department. I was party to that on Friday. I was lucky enough to go to the golf tournament for the Texas One Fund. Someone invited me. It was nice enough to invite me. You know, what I saw out there, Jerry, I saw John Fields, the golf coach.
Right.
And, you know, I saw Vic Schaefer, the women's basketball coach out there. Sark and all of his assistants were out there. I saw Chris Del Conte was leading the way. He was the Pied Piper. I saw a group of coaches and an athletic department that were supporting one another in all of this. It was very impressive to me. Exactly. They just seem on. They all seem like they are in tune with one another. Yep. And supporting one another right now. And it is having a positive effect. As it relates to football, Jerry, talking about firing all cylinders, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I think Texas is in – they have great momentum right now. I know people are worried about the number of commitments, but that's just not Sark's game. Sark is going to – he plays the long game. And the long game in recruiting now is June visits, okay? And then through December, and they'll continue to evaluate a few guys. I mean, just to look at last year, some flips, Xavier Filsomi, the one that stands out to me. But Texas has a momentum. They lead for a number of guys right now. Now lead, and I always caution this, we live in the NIL world, you're not going to get everybody, but the key I look at for Texas is they have 40-plus guys coming in for official visits, counting committed guys in June. If their class – just comes from that, it's a fourth straight top five class. Maybe you could be six, you could be seven, you could be three, you could be four. I mean, it's right there. But the reality is they're going to have four straight classes that are very similar talent-wise. If the class comes from those official visitors alone, I mean, they are on the right track. I mean, look, I think they're in a good spot for DeCorian Moore, Jamie French. I mean, you go down the list, Riley Pettijohn, John Mills, Devin Coleman, Jordan Coleman. I mean, you just keep going down the list. And then Texas is in a good spot with a number of guys. Here's DeCorian Moore running by everybody. And those guys can run. I mean, look, he blew those guys away in the district track meet too. So this isn't just a Friday night thing. A lot of people have a hard time keeping up with DeCorian Moore, whether it's on a football field or a track. He is a super freak. But Texas is in a good spot right now. I mean, they lead for the guys, James Simon. I put the list up on Texas Football, trending Texas list with this morning's recruiting nuggets. And I just think Texas is in a good spot. Look, they could get Nick Brooks. I mean, it's right there. They're right there in a number of recruitments. So my point in all this is, and they're right there with Fasusi, right? My point in all this is the 42, 43, 44 official visitors, that number may creep up to 46, 47. If the class comes from those guys alone and nobody else is added through a senior evaluation or a flip, Texas is going to have another top five, six, seven, three, four class. I mean, four straight. And that's just continuing the stack talent.
All right, y'all. Before we move on, Bobby, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about John Donovan and Longhorn Wealth Management Group.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you to our sponsor, John Donovan, President, Longhorn Wealth Management. John's a proud Texas Exes Life member. And on top of that, John's wife and all six of John's siblings, as well as John, all graduated from UT. This explains why John branded his firm Longhorn Wealth and dedicated his firm to providing total wealth management for Texas alums, employees, family, and friends. John spent more than 30 years serving Longhorns, and he wants to bring his CFP expertise and fiduciary standard to the benefit of all OTF members and their families in order to help them achieve their own financial independence. So to receive your free 90-minute consultation to explore how Longhorn Wealth can help you and your family maximize your health, minimize your taxes, and secure your own financial future, simply call the Longhorn Wealth team at 972-707-4900 or schedule an appointment online at longhornwealth.net. Hook them, John Donovan. Thanks.
Well, before we move on, guys, I want to read two super chat comments real quick. First one from UT Boy says, good morning, family. Welcome from Flipia, Texas. Thank you, UT Boy.
he caught a big bass today, named it DeCorian.
Yeah, there you go. And then the other one from Jerry's Jack Links says, it's starting to feel a little bit like the Mac and Dodge days.
Bobby, more dominant. I want to say this, not necessarily yet in football, but they were certain. Mac and DeLoss were certainly aligned, but the athletic department overall is more dominant today than it's ever been. The depth of the coaching bench at Texas is stronger than it's ever been. And I say that with all due respect from all the coaches that have come before. But, you know, I don't know that there is a what I would call a weak coach or a weak link in the Texas athletic department right now. That I wanted to add that. That's what is so impressive to me. You know, there have been times when men's basketball was good, but women's basketball was bad. There's, you know, or the track team was going through having some issues or whatever. I mean, right now, the athletic department is truly firing on just about all cylinders, in my opinion.
Well, Bobby, you mentioned that you played golf on Friday, but let's talk about it. It was a big weekend for Texas. They had the One Fund event. Can you go in depth a little bit on that for people that may not be aware?
Yeah, absolutely. I've talked about it a little bit. On Friday, I did play golf. I checked in with you guys. I checked in with Jerry on Friday before I had to get going. But we had five people in our pairs, a golf scramble, Jackson Shipley and Brian Boddicker. I don't know if you guys remember Brian or not, but big, tall, big man in basketball.
From the Final Four team. Yeah. One of Rick Hart's first key recruits.
He liked to shoot from the outside.
Yes.
And he was terrific at it. He spent 10 years in Europe, by the way, in playing professionally. He was just such a nice guy. I got along real well with him. Jackson Shipley is what you would think a Shipley would be. They're good at every sport. Mm-hmm. It could be ping pong. It could be golf. It could be whatever. It was a best ball scramble, and we literally used Jackson Shipley's ball maybe 75% of the time. I mean, it was like, okay, everybody else hit, and then let's see where Jackson lands. And that's where we're going pretty much every time. He was a stellar, especially off the tee. It was just ridiculous. But hey, thought process on this whole Texas One Fund deal. Not only did they have that golf tournament on Friday where I think there were 100-plus people in attendance, including coaches and former players, et cetera. Then on Saturday, they had a concert where, you know, they sold tables and it was up on DKR. Brooks and Dunn, Ryan Bingham, some other guys performed. But really the talk of that afterwards was two things. One was the auction, the private auction that they had at the event itself. Literally, they had five or six experiences, like going on a Michigan trip, for example, with the team, staying at the team hotels, going and going on the plane with them, et cetera. That sold for multiple six figures. I think around $400,000, for example. There were like four or five other pieces of silent auctions that also sold in the six figures. All of that money goes directly into the NIL fund at Texas One Fund to support, you know, the athletics ventures at the University of Texas. So I thought that was really, really good. Overall, just a successful weekend. Patrick Wheels Smith, the head of the One Fund, some other guys on that board are just tremendous assets to the University of Texas. And because of that, because of this quote unquote alignment or whatever you want to call it, I think things are moving in really, really the right direction.
I would also want to mention what else is moving in the right direction. We crossed 47,000 subscribers on Texas football. So thank you to everybody for your continued support. I mean, 50's in sight, guys. We're going to have a party on the 50K coffee and football. I don't even know what's going to happen at 100K. I think at 100K, I auctioned off Bobby running a 40 against an OTF member who wants to super chat their way into racing Bobby in the 40 like Rich Eisen at the NFL Combine. So
I know Bobby's looking forward to that.
Still got the goods. 100K party not far away.
Not happening. Not happening.
I got to say, Jay Archer always makes me jealous. Good morning from St. Pete Beach. Had to do that one. Good morning, Jay.
Oh, man. All right, guys. Well, another thing that's moving in the right direction right now, more success than just the football field, is the Diamonds, softball and baseball. Softball obviously hosting a super regional at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And they just dominated all this past week in the regional. That game will be Friday at 5:00 on ESPN2. So congratulations to Coach Mike White and his team. We'll have to get him back on here at some point to talk about that. And then baseball, the Big 12 will start the tournament and got the bracket right here. Their first game tomorrow night, 7:30. That's Central Time against Texas Tech. And then they'll play the winner of either Cincinnati, Central Florida, or Oklahoma State, assuming that they win that game against Tech. So lots of stuff going on.
You know, they didn't get a bye. They wanted a bye. Yeah. But Oklahoma State didn't play an extra game. I don't know if y'all
two less than Texas.
Yeah. So it was a little interesting on that. I mean, I think that Texas, we a lot of people bemoaned David Pierce midseason. I mean, a lot, including on this chat, right? And that's fun, all well and good, but I think he ended up winning 9 series on the year. Now, most of them were the 2 games to 1 variety, whereas some other teams swept a couple times. Texas did not sweep a team in conference until they swept Kansas this past weekend. But the point being, you know, at least Texas did not have a great season. There's no doubt about that. But they didn't have a horrible season either.
No.
They winning 9 of the last 10 series, something like that. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
The only one was the BYU. That was the only conference loss.
I know it's not perfect, but you know, every season's not perfect. They still fought. I think the team still fought, showed they could do some stuff. So we'll have to wait and see how it turns out in the playoffs.
I think it's fair to say it's a huge week, couple weeks
for David or for the baseball program.
For David Pierce.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No. You gotta prove it.
Yeah. No, I'm in agreement with that. But I'm kind of scratching my head at the Big 12, giving Oklahoma State the number 2 seed, Texas 20-10 in conference, Oklahoma State 19-9. And Texas beat them head to head. It's just, but we'll see. So, anyway, all right, guys, we got a couple of other super chats that we need to get to real quick here. David Parcell says, "I'm due for a super chat. Y'all keep being great, Huggle."
David, thank you, David Parcell.
And then the other one we have is from Jay Lee, and it's actually a question. He says, "We talk a lot about player improvement and expectations, but Sark also changes and improves each season. What do you think he can change or improve on this year?"
Well, I think everybody's going to point to red zone offense for Sark, and it'll particularly be on the offensive side of the ball when you start talking about Sark, because we know that's what he directly oversees. But I'm not so sure that defensive, the secondary isn't going to take on renewed emphasis from him this season and putting it all together back there. But red zone offense, incorporating new players and more receivers this year, maybe something he works on a little bit. So those are two things I have for Sark. What do you have, Jerry?
No, I think that's it. I really do. I think the interesting thing will be where is with the 12-team playoff, 2 off weeks, right? I think you're going to – and Sark's just said it too many times – I think one of the next things we're going to see with Sark is they're going to continue to play more players. I mean, and is that an improvement? I don't know. I think that's an adapting to what could be a longer season if you're a team that sees yourself as a college football playoff team. But, I, you know, with red zone and the coverages matching everything together, less blown coverages, you know, more aggressive at times. I think those are the two main things. You know, I think they've improved so much. Areas like edge and recruiting, right? Speed, team speed. I think he's done a fabulous job with that. This is going to be a faster team this year, 1-85, than it was last year. I mean, it's just reality. The one thing I would say is to expect for Texas fans is they're going to play more guys. They're going to try to develop some of these younger guys on the field more, because one loss doesn't end your season. It puts more pressure on you, but it doesn't knock you out anymore. But I think that's one of the things, and Sark said it, and I've heard a few other coaches say it, is really building that depth on the field on Saturdays is going to be huge moving forward for the power programs that have the expectations of being playoff teams, because it's just going to be the reality if you start playing what's close to an NFL season over the next few years when playoffs go to 16 teams, which is inevitable. So I think that's one of the things, the major changes you're going to see in college football on the field on Saturdays is got these guys playing more players and more young guys. But here's the other part of that. They can do that because 70% of these classes, recruiting classes, these kids are enrolling early. So it's not, it's changed so much from 17 to 20 showing up in June to 17 to 20, 21 showing up in January. It accelerates the process to where these guys, these coaches are comfortable enough putting them on the field for even for limited snaps.
Hey, I have one thing I want to mention real quick and take on this comment right here, Burgermeister. Second half play calling needs to improve. They seem to start off on fire and then second half they fall off. You know what I would say to you? In year one, it was drastic, right? I mean, I think we all would agree. Year one, they'd start off like wildfire and then just get, you know, second half would be brutal. Second year, it improved a little bit. Last year, I actually thought it improved a lot. It was still a weak point, but it is improved. And a little bit of that, I think, is Sark's, you know, going deeper into his bag with more players and more options. You know, whenever you only have Xavier Worthy out there and Bijan, and it's a two-pronged attack, and your offensive line 3 years ago wasn't really up to snuff, it's hard. I think that is actually – I don't think Burgermeister's wrong on this. I think that Sark has steadily improved that. That would be my take on that. That second half fall off or third quarter question, I don't think that it's been as big a deal of late. I will also add that the Texas defense has started improving in the third quarter too, in my opinion. So it's not just one. It's both.
All right, guys. Well, plenty of time to, to get your questions in right here on Coffee and Football. And I wanted to take this one real quick from Ski Break. He says, Director's Cup in the bag. I just looked at the update here from Twitter. And that's the current standings right now, what they're at. But he released a prediction, and he still has the Longhorns in the lead. Now, that was 5 days ago, so some stuff may or may not have changed, but looks like the Longhorns are going to have a good race to the end there.
Yeah, Brett Wilkinson is the guy that does behind the Director's Cup updates. You can get those on Twitter if you want to. We'll have him on later this week talking about that and where Texas predicts. But with the strong finish in tennis, rowing's going in the right direction, softball right direction, it's going to be hard for Stanford to hold off the Longhorns is my understanding right now.
Hey, Blake, I'm going to bring this one up real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Texas recruiting Josiah Sharma. Yeah, I actually spoke with Sharma last night. I have an update on ontexasfootball.com on that this morning. But I spoke with Sharma last night, and it's Alabama or Texas right now. It's one of those two schools. He may mix in a visit to Oregon, but he's only got two officials scheduled. He canceled Washington, canceled Utah. It's Texas June 7th through 9th, and it's Alabama the 21st through 23rd. I think Alabama is the favorite there, but I think Texas has a legitimate shot. And we'll see if Oregon is added as that third visit. But Kalen DeBoer was the first head coach. They were on him very early, on Sharma very early. He was committed to Washington when DeBoer took the Alabama job. Johnny Nance and Kenny Baker have done a good job in that recruitment, giving Texas a chance. Only two officials scheduled right now. I think Oregon will be his third. I think the decision ultimately comes from Alabama or Texas.
Let's take some more recruiting questions. Max says, Jerry, talk about the longest human alive, Smith the Rogbo.
Well, so if anybody didn't see the interviews, there was and by the way, somebody on here, Isaiah Martin, I believe, said, hey, I've got a wireless mic coming to start putting on the kids for the interviews. That should be delivered tomorrow. I don't know if I have time for this week's stuff, but because I've got two or three of them later this week. But Smith the Rogbo, I was there Thursday. I went to Hastings and then Fort Bend Marshall. And Fort Bend Marshall has Caleb Chester. Those interviews are on Texas Football from yesterday. Really good interviews with those kids. Caleb Chester, extremely impressive. He's a football junkie now. Those kids are successful to me at defensive back. But Smith Arogbo, look, I think Texas or Oklahoma right now. He's going to visit Missouri. Texas Tech, I believe he went to SMU this last weekend. He may even go to Kansas. And he has other schools trying to recruit him, but really, though, I think Texas and Oklahoma are the two right now. Now, his family, academics, they don't really care about football. Smith cares very much about football and academics. I think the parents would prefer close to home, but we'll see how everything works out. But man, he's a kid that, you know, if I was picking today, I'd pick Texas, but we'll see what happens long term. But a really good kid. He was 204 pounds, 6'4", 204 on his huddle tape as a junior. He's now 220. He just turned 17 a week and a half ago. He's got that Taurus May birthday like myself and a few others. But his get-off, his natural pass rushing feel and ability are very high-end. He's got a ways to fill out his frame. That's the thing that excites you about Smith Orogbo is he's not even close. He's barely scratching the surface. The coaching staff does a great job at Hastings. But he's only been playing football 2 years. And he wasn't really in youth sports a lot growing up. He was like, I played basketball in the backyard or in the neighborhood. But he wasn't a youth sports guy. He's an academic-focused-minded family. So he really just got into high school football 2 years ago. And he really started last season, I think, from talking to him and talking to Hastings coaching staff to realize, oh, I got a chance to be pretty good at this. But he 10-inch hands, 81-inch wingspan. He's got all of that stuff. He's got all the combine stuff. He would test well. He changes directions well. He's got reactive quickness. He's got body quickness. He's got a chance to be a big-time player as a pass rusher.
All right, and then our next question, Jerry, when it comes to recruiting, is from E. Kim. Says, good morning from Rockford, Illinois. Any new updates on Keyote Armstrong?
Nothing new on my end. I think the June visits are going to tell the story here, LSU, Auburn, but it's really Texas or Texas A&M right now. And I think A&M's had him on campus the most times. So you say, okay, A&M's probably got the upper hand heading the June visits, but we'll see what happens with that. I think he really likes the Texas offense. It's easy to see a tight end have success in Steve Sarkisian's offense. So I think it'll be interesting to see which way it goes. And look, Nick Townsend, the tight end from Decaney, I think that's Alabama or Texas right now. So Texas is right there with these guys. It's kind of what I posted this morning on TexasFootball.com with the Monday Morning Nuggets. I think they're trending for 10, 12 guys. I think they're right there for a number of other guys. It's going to be a tremendous recruiting class. We're going to have to kind of see who Texas makes big pushes for here coming up from June 14th on through the end of June, Bobby. I think that's going to be huge in how this class kind of takes shape.
You mentioned Nick Townsend. That immediately made me think about Tanook Hines, receiver at Nick Townsend's high school, Spring Decaney High Good School. Point. You know, he ran really well at state track meet. Texas has now set up an official visit with him. Is that accurate to your knowledge?
Yes.
I was going to ask you where that was because I haven't talked to you about him.
Tanook Hines out of Decaney. So here's a little background on Tanook Hines. So 2 years ago as a sophomore, when Decaney played Eisenhower, Steve Sarkisian and Brennan Marion were at that game. And Ryan Niblett was committed to Texas, obviously, from Eisenhower. Jonah Wilson was a former Texas commitment committed to Houston that Texas was still kind of tracking at that time. Tanook Hines was the best receiver on the field that day. I mean, he was very impressive as a sophomore. He only played 5 games last year, battled some injury, but he is a kid that's kind of started to fill out his frame. He's 6'1", 190, 192 pounds in that area. But he ran 10.53. Went to state, ran low 21 in the 200, and those are FAT times now. So on the track this spring, he elevated his recruitment considerably. He's arrow up ascending. And Chris Jackson, Jeff Banks are by the school recently, and they're trying to get Tanook Hines on campus June 21st through 23rd. I think Notre Dame's kind of the front runner. He visited him and Towns visited Arizona State in late April. He's got Notre Dame. He's got a couple others coming up as well. I think Baylor maybe on the 14th through 16th. Ole Miss is trying to get him on campus. He's got a USC he's going to the May 31st through June 2nd with Nick Townsend. But the interesting thing with Tanook Hines is half of the schools recruiting him like him as an athlete think he'd be a hell of a safety. Then there's half the schools that are recruiting him as an athlete that really think he could be very, very good at the wide receiver position. So it's an interesting recruitment. He prefers wide receiver, but I'm telling you, this guy could be good on either side because he's physical and he's fast. And that fast has now proven out on the track. I mean, you sit there and you pop off Bobby 10-5-3 and 21-3, 21-4 as a junior in high school. That gets a lot of national attention in recruiting because he missed half of his junior season. So some people were kind of on the fence on him. But then when you put up those track times, it suddenly becomes, all right, we want you to visit June 21st through 23rd.
Yeah, I think that was what I really wanted to hear, is why is he moving up so much right now in a lot of people's minds? And I think you just clearly articulated that. Why, for the life of me, anybody would go as a receiver up to Notre Dame right now? I don't know. You know, Jaden Greathouse did it too. But why?
Yeah.
Why would that be the place where you go play wide receiver of all your choices?
Yeah. Well, let's just hope they have a great day in College Station.
Yeah, there we go. We'll see.
Hey, by the way, I'll say this on Notre Dame. The receiver from FAU that they got out of the portal is going to be a stud for them. I do think this is going to be the best offense we've seen from Notre Dame in a while this year, passing offense with Riley Leonard.
Let's see, Jerry. I mean,
Bobby's like, in let's see, bro.
I mean, look, their offense is sputtered for what? I mean, I don't know. And it's not like they don't have NFL offensive linemen, too. I mean, it's just, I don't know that they hire real well on offense there. So
I'm going to bring this up. I think Texas just went in a different direction, honestly.
That's the defensive lineman out of Indianapolis.
That's the edge out of Indianapolis. I think Hayden Lowe coming in for a visit, Smith Orogbo, he's ascended earlier than Tanuk Hines, but that's a guy that had 1.5 offers before. I would say 1.5 because one wasn't probably committable. He had 1.5 offers had entering his junior season. Smith Orogbo now is 25. So Lance Jackson's committed and is amongst the best athletes in America, pound for pound. And then you have Marco Jones out of California. Texas is very California focused. I think they feel like they have a really good shot at some of these kids in Cali. We'll see how it plays out. But with Smith Orogbo, Lance Jackson already in the fold, obviously Hayden Lowe is a top target for Texas as well.
All right, guys, we'll do one more recruiting question, and then we're going to switch gears here. I'm actually going to combine two questions for you, Jerry. This first one from Zachary. Excuse me. He says, Jerry, do you think Dia Bell will hold his 5-star rating until he graduates? And then AJJ Sports says, do you think one of the 26 quarterbacks will commit this year?
Yeah, I think either Troy Hoon or Dia Bell is going to be committed to Texas at some point in June. I really believe that. I think both. When I was at American Heritage, Dia Bell told me he would like to have a decision in June. So, you know, let's see what happens. And I think I said this morning already. Everything's running together. But the only other visit he has scheduled right now, Dia Bell, is June 13th, 14th, LSU. So Troy Hoon, Dia Bell, both be at Texas June 1st. That's where KJ Lacy committed last year at the elite camp and the pool party thereafter. So we'll see. This will be – they throw for Milwee for the last time this week. And what AJ Milwee does, he takes that video. Man, he's there. They did it with Keelan Russell. They did it with KJ Lacy this last week. They take that video, send that off to Sark. Sark gets a look at that video. They have continued to evaluate those guys. Then Sark will see Troy Hoon and Dia Bell in person on June 1st. And then I think we're going to find out pretty quickly which guy Sarkisian decides to really make the push for and try to get committed. But I do think Texas will have a quarterback committed in June for the 26 class. Will Dia Bell keep his ranking? Yeah, he's impressive in person now. He's got a little moxie. He's got some leadership. He's got a lot of confidence, he should, right? He's Rajah Bell's kid. I mean, he should be a confident kid. He's had success his first year starting. He plays with some absolute blurs on that team, by the way. They have 3 5'10", 5'9", 160, 70-pound receivers on that team that are absolutely go daddies. Now, one's committed to Miami, but they have a freshman that ran 10.29 last year, FAT, as a freshman. He ran 20.4 200 2 weeks ago in a regional meet as a sophomore. So he's a – and I said all that to say this. He's accustomed to throwing the ball to really fast dudes. So that is not going to surprise him at the next level. He throws to speed at American Heritage. Bobby had an interesting comparison for Dia Bell, and I don't think it's wild after seeing him in person. Bobby said Shedeur Sanders. And from a frame standpoint and the way he plays standpoint, I think it's a pretty good comparison. Diabeth, somebody's asking about Dia's measurement, 6'2", 195 right now. Bobby, it's not.
I think he can throw comparison
as a player. I saw Shadur a lot growing up, being part of ESPN Under Armour, the Prime 21 camps, Under Armour All-America game. Not a bad comparison for their talent levels.
What I think he does too, and people just ask who's a better fit for Sark's offense. And Hun would be the more prototypical Sark prospect.
Yeah.
Without question. I mean, but I don't know that Sark is necessarily looking. I don't know that Sark's actually looking for prototypical right now. I think he's looking for what fits best within his entire quarterback room. I mean, he's got a big gun. I mean, think about if you're talking about recruiting, look past Ewers and even Arch Manning right now and focus on what they have in the pipeline. Trey Owens, big right-hander, moves around okay, but not a mover, yeah. Right? Absolute hose for an arm. Then you have KJ Lacy, pinpoint passer, moves around real well, a lot of reps, et cetera. Dia Bell's a little bit in between those two.
Yeah.
Right. And so I feel like it's people say, well, what is Sark's type? I think Sark's type as a quarterback is a winner. And also he wants to make sure that he's getting guys that fit between each other, that give him a little bit of a different feel so people can't just stack up and say, oh, he's always going to have a statue at quarterback. If you're able to do that, then Sark becomes more predictable as a play caller long term in a league in the SEC, which could like decapitate, by the way, statuesque play call or quarterback.
Yeah. So I agree with Bobby, and here's my thought. What does Sark always start with when talking about a quarterback? He can make all the throws. So that's the one thing they have to have. Can you make all the throws in a pro-style system? So just know this for people. I mean, there are people questioning Arch Manning's arm strength coming out of high school, and I just literally went, oh, my gosh, pass the Tylenol, please. Sark literally doesn't recruit a quarterback that can't make all the throws, and that means you can make all the throws at the NFL level because he runs a pro-style NFL offense. So the people that are questioning all the arm strength of these guys, I mean, you're sitting there saying you know more than Steve Sarkisian about what he's looking for at the quarterback position. So let's throw that away. If you can make all the throws, that's the number one thing you have to have. If you have a noodle arm, you aren't getting recruited by Texas, okay? So anybody who's questioning Arch Manning's arm strength, KJ Lacy's arm strength, give it a rest. And I'm not talking about the fans. I'm talking about the people in my industry. It's idiotic, okay? And it's just dumb is what it is. So that's number one. Then the gamesmanship. Are you a gamer? I think the gamesmanship, I think that personality with Sark, that's kind of what he was. They are drawn to those guys. If you were that way, you were drawn to that as well. And Trey Owens is that confident gamer, gamesmanship guy. KJ Lacy's that way. Keelan Russell's that way. Dia Bell, talking to him, he's that way, right? Sark isn't recruiting guys that aren't that. So I think those are the two really big things. Obviously, accuracy with any quarterback, right? But that's a given. I mean, who's going to recruit? I mean, maybe. But not many of those guys, because some of these guys do think they can develop anything, and sometimes it doesn't work. But the gamesmanship and the arm talent have to be there. If those two things aren't there, Sark isn't recruiting a guy quarterback.
Well, let's talk about something that is there, Jerry, and that – is Manscaped.
I'm on the road, but wherever I am, here's the Manscaped that's always here. Hey, fellas, blink if you haven't purchased your Father's Day gift yet. Yeah, we thought so. Today's episode's brought to you by Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Maybe your pops has had a bush since the 70s. God, I hope not. And that's okay. Our friends at Manscaped have crafted the total package for this special day. Whether it's for the boys downstairs, his beard, or the best pair of underwear out there, Manscaped has all the bases covered. Head on over to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with code ONTEXAS, all caps. From daddy to zaddy, trust Manscaped. And then there's this. You know that beard trimmer your dad's been using since you were in grade school? Yeah, it probably needs upgrading. Introducing the Beard Hedger Pro Kit, the complete beard maintenance for all the bearded kings out there. No beard kit would be complete without Manscaped's handyman face shaver. I have that in the car for the road, by the way. I just do it in the car driving 85 miles an hour on I-10 or 20. Nobody tell the cops. But for that smooth finish we know he loves, this bad boy is all he needs. Compact enough to fit in any travel case, make sure he texts us on his next trip as I do. That's manscaped.com on Texas, all caps. Take care of your father on Father's Day.
There you go. Good stuff for sure. I missed that read while I'm gone. So glad to have it back. All right, guys. We got some more questions here. And again, plenty of time to get your questions in, so please do so. But we have a super chat that we need to read here. This one from Chris. He says, I don't have the stats to back this up, but I recall Quinn starting slow in home games, especially when the competition wasn't what you would consider top-notch. And I'd love to see that improve this season.
You know, there's some value to that. I don't necessarily disagree. It almost felt like early in the season, he wasn't ready for the speed of the game early. And then he got used to the speed of the game, right? Of course, the start to the OU game was probably the worst. That wasn't a home game per se. But there's some value in that. I think once Quinn gets used to the speed of the game, then he starts dealing a little bit. But I think that sometimes he needs to be ready, a little bit more ready to go out of the gate. And I do think that's anecdotal too. I mean, we don't have that many instances of it, but you know, what was it? Louisiana Monroe 2 years ago. I mean, there are a couple games where he's been slow out of the gate, relatively speaking.
And then our next question here is going to come from the Bosky. He says, question, are there any concerns over the amount of batted balls at the line of scrimmage? That happened a lot in the Washington game and a few others during the season.
Am I worried about it? No. Is it something to watch for? Yes. Quinn may need to do a little bit better job with his eyes, taking people away from the throw a little bit instead of staring things down. But a lot of that is based on Sark's offense too, throwing to predetermined spots. So I wouldn't put that all on Quinn. And I don't know that batted balls, other than the Washington game, was an actual issue. I mean, do you remember another game where it was an actual issue, Jerry?
No, not to where I was like, okay, this is a problem. No.
Right.
And look, if you can't, here's the one thing. One way to defend the RPO game is if you can't get home, you get your hands up. Yes. And that's college football in general, right? That's how you recruit guys with long wingspans. You hope to see Ethan Burke do that 5 or 6 times this year, right? I mean, because, hey, the one thing we know is if Ethan Burke bats a ball, somehow, some way, it's going to find Alfred Collins' hands. So that's the one thing we know. So more batted balls in the RPO game in college football in general, I think that's where you're seeing the majority of them. But I haven't done the PFF study, to be clear. That's just watching games with my eyes. I feel like getting in those RPO lanes and getting your hands up, if you're not going to get home, is the smart thing to do defensively.
Our next question, fellas, comes from Michael Rodriguez. He says, with the Texas program success establishing itself as a contender, did y'all envision it happening this steadily under Sark's guidance?
It's a great question, Michael Rodriguez. After year one, boy, and especially, here's the thing that had me worried. Offensive line recruiting, not that Flood can't recruit and evaluate players, and not that Sark can't evaluate offensive linemen, and they do a good job recruiting these guys. But when they played that long game, Bobby, a year one on the offensive line, I had to get accustomed to Sark's approach on that, and I was a little worried on the offensive line recruiting because Texas has been taking the B-list guys too long. And I was like, ooh, where are the A-list guys going to come from on the offensive line for Texas? Then Mario Cristobal takes the Miami job, which helped Texas. Then there was, you know, NIL, right? But the Banks and Cam Williams flips, then winning out for DJ Campbell in the long game there, even though he signed in December and kept it quiet from everybody, including OU, which is still the funniest thing ever, that the Oklahoma members of their staff showed up at a Bowie basketball game and the kid had been signed for weeks. I still can't believe DJ pulled that off. That's kind of impressive in recruiting. But we knew about it, but a lot of people did not. That was just amazing he pulled off. But, Bobby, they got the guys late in that class in 22 on the offensive line. That was a and then defensively, they looked so bad. You said, okay, how long is it going to take? You know, you give up 57 to Kansas, I think, at home. How long is it going to take to get there? But once I locked into the recruiting approach and where Texas was headed from an NIL perspective, the worries in recruiting went away. But the offensive line early on, I said, you can't be taking B-list guys and ascend quickly. And that's why there's a lot of pressure on A&M in this 25 class on the offensive line, by the way. But go ahead, Bobby.
He held firm, and it paid off for him. And I'm talking about Sark and his commitment to recruiting A-list guys. I will freely admit I was disappointed with the first season under Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah.
There were glimpses of really strong play. Xavier Worthy was a true bright spot, I thought. But you know what? Bijan Robinson was sitting there and maybe didn't get as many carries or as many touches as you'd want. But I look back at it, and there was nothing where you were just like, oh, my God, that's not fixable. And so even though they went 5-7, it wasn't a scenario where I was sitting there saying, okay, they look like their coaching is just discombobulated. It was never that. It was always about the product that they were actually executing. I remember a couple of drops, for example, on plays where the guy's wide open, and I think it was Casey Kane that dropped the pass, you know, and that could have turned a game, you know. And so I look back on that, you know, and I feel a little bit differently maybe than I should in that regard. But I wouldn't say I was skeptical after the first year of Steve Sarkisian, but I was definitely on alert. And the fact that he's done the last 2 years like he has and now has more, the recruiting is starting to pay off. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know. That's really what turned it around. I really think recruiting and the portal helped turn Texas and Steve Sarkisian around. He didn't have a chance to do either that first year. He got almost nothing in the portal his first year.
Well, I mean, and Sark talked about this, I believe, in the interview with Josh Pate, and he didn't bring out anybody by name, but of course I am. But he talked about not taking more risks in the portal early on because they had to versus now. So the Ajay Hall, who, by the way, is walking on at UCF, good luck to him. But he needs to come through with all that talent, man. But Ajay Hall, Jahlil Billings, some of those guys they took early in the portal, some were just some stopgap fillers for a year, obviously, but then they took some risks. Some guys that couldn't make it in Nick Saban's program. And I've always said, if you can't make it playing for Nick, then it's on you. I mean, that means you're not moving towards maximizing your talent because he's going to get you out of there if you're not. But they took some risks because they had to. Now in the portal, they're not taking risks. They're taking surefire starters and guys with futures after football who have already put it on the board in most cases. That is a huge change for Sarkisian as they've – I thought it was huge, huge. And we talked about this from 5-7. He had to win 8 the next year. You had to have that 3-game improvement because if you didn't, then questions, people would have more questions, negative recruiting. You're going to get pummeled in negative recruiting. Obviously, the move to the SEC has been big as well in recruiting. We have to give credit where all credit's due. And that move to the SEC is powerful because I'm here to tell you, if Texas was still in the Big 12, Colin Simmons would not be at Texas, regardless of anything else.
Yeah, that's definitely contributed. You mentioned that. This is a good point. You mentioned your rule on Nick Saban. If you can't make it for Nick Saban, he's not going to be able to make it for you. Think about Texas and what they did afterwards with Alabama kids this year. They took three, two of whom started for Nick Saban, Amari Nyblack and Isaiah Bond. They took a third that was a backup, Kendrick Blackshear. Well, Kendrick Blackshear didn't make it for Alabama, really. He was going to be a backup for Texas. He's already gone, too.
Yep.
And so think about that. Sark hired a great staff. That's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that. So here's what I want to hit on with that, because if you really study this stuff and you look around at college football, when these guys get the big time job, do they know who to hire? Do they understand the job and know who to hire and fill that the staff out in the correct way? I think that is so much, so important to sink or swim for these guys. I mean, you look back. I mean, Will Muschamp, hell of a defensive coordinator. Hire Charlie Weiss, not good. That was not good at Florida, wasn't good. I mean, but Sark, when he got to Texas, Jeff Banks left Tuscaloosa in the middle of the night, great hire. Kyle Flood, obviously offensive line. Bo Davis, obviously defensive line development, great hire, right? I mean, you kind of go down the list, and he, I thought he did a great job. Jeff Banks, the history recruiting in Texas, whether that – was all the way back in the day or at A&M, right? We're at Alabama, wherever he's been. That was huge for Texas and DFW. And then on top of that, what did Jeff Banks do? He had an idea to bring in Chris Gilbert. Okay, so that's a strong hire by Sark to bring in Jeff Banks, because Jeff Banks knows the area. He knows DFW so well. He also recruited in Arizona effectively. He knows that area so well. Oh, we need to get Chris Gilbert here. Okay, you made a great hire in Jeff Banks, because he had the idea to get Chris Gilbert as well. But I think he hired a really good staff. And some people would look at the wide receiver coach. Well, you're going to keep Stan Drayton, solid to keep on staff. Then when he leaves, what'd you do? You arguably upgraded with Tashard Choice. I'm not even sure arguably you upgraded with Tashard Choice. I think Johnny Nansen, tremendous hire in the offseason for Texas. You know, I think Kenny Baker is a very, very good young coach. So I think Sark's continued. He knew who to hire when he got the job. I'm not saying you hit 9-9, but you hit 8-9. And then you made a change after 1 year where you need to make a change. And then you made that change to get that position right in your eyes. I think Chris Jackson was a really good hire 2 years ago, but he knew who to hire from a coaching and recruiting perspective. And if you look at prior Texas coaches, man, you can look at some of those hires and say, it's easy to look back on that and say they didn't know who to hire for the job they just got. It's just reality, Bobby.
No, it is a tell early. If the coaches, Tom Herman did it. He brought his entire staff from Houston. You know, it is a tell early on if a coach doesn't have what I would call a Rolodex, to use an old term. Right. That if they don't have the guys that can come with them, it's one thing. And I will say this, it's one thing for you to go to a Washington like Kellen DeBoer did and bring all your guys. OK, Texas is a different animal. They're expected to go national in recruiting, to have ties, heavy ties to the state of Texas, et cetera. If you don't have a Rolodex as a head coach and you're at Texas, it is a recipe for, I don't want to say disaster, but a recipe for a slow start.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Well, I mean, think about it this way too, is if you got the Texas job today and you didn't hire the correct staff, how are you going to beat Oklahoma, A&M, LSU, Georgia, and all these teams that are recruiting in this area? Hey, good luck. It's not going to happen. So I think it's – Sark just, he knew who to hire for the job. He was prepared for the job from a recruiting standpoint, from an understanding standpoint. And sadly, there's a lot of guys. And some of you look, and I've always said this, I love Charlie Strong as a guy. And it was a search firm that kind of pushed Charlie Strong. But Charlie had never recruited Texas players. So if you've never recruited the state of Texas, you don't know who to hire on your staff to maximize that ability. Right. So Charlie was behind the eight ball when he was hired at Texas, because it probably wasn't the right hire. A mix wasn't the right place for him, wasn't the right hire for Texas. But as good a dude as Charlie's been, he's great to me. When you got the job, he wasn't prepared to know who to hire for that job to maximize. And if you don't, it's tough.
I will tell you, one of the guys that, Jerry, you and I know, Mike Giglio, was the director of player personnel for Texas. He is now down at UTSA as the director of player personnel for Jeff Traylor and doing a good job down there. Hey, guys, I want to tell you guys about Longhorn Wealth Management Group. Again, we would like to thank our sponsor, John Donovan, president of Longhorn Wealth Management. As a proud UT alum, John has served more than 15 years as a Texas Exes board member and has focused his firm on serving his fellow UT alums and employees. John's a certified financial planner who has spent more than 30 years providing investment, retirement, insurance, and estate planning services and solutions to Longhorns in Texas and across the nation. So to receive your free 90-minute consultation to explore how Longhorn Wealth can help you and your family maximize your wealth, minimize your taxes, and secure your own financial legacy, simply call the Longhorn Wealth team, 972-707-4900, or schedule an appointment online at longhornwealth.net. Hook them from John Donovan and the folks at Longhorn Wealth Management Group.
That's right. We want to thank them for sponsoring each and every Monday right here on Coffee and Football. And another person we need to thank is UT Boy for another super chat. He says the return of our Jerry Hamilton was huge as well.
Appreciate it.
So thank you, UT Boy. All right, guys, we got time for some more questions here. So let's jump right into it. This first one from Phil.
Ooh.
Who are going to be the three best defensive linemen that Texas faces this year? And how do you think our offensive line handles them?
So let's go teams first. Michigan's going to have the best DL Texas faces this year. Bobby, Georgia second, A&M third, maybe A&M second, Georgia third. One of those two, those are going to be the three best D lines Texas faces. As far as the best players, Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, Dion Walker, Kentucky's a bad dude now. I can't remember his name, the five tech. 4i, 5 tech at Georgia. Mikel Williams, sorry. He's a bad dude. He may be a first rounder after this year. Nick Skoten at A&M, the Purdue transfer from Bryan High, who used to have a different last name. He's probably going to be a first round pick. Shamar Turner at A&M is very good. Georgia has a couple other guys on the interior over the ball that play that 4-3 area. They're very good. I think those are the best three D line Texas is going to face this year, Bobby. And I think they have about five guys that are mocked to go in the first rounds of various 25 NFL drafts, which are meaningless right now, but does tell you the talent level that Texas faces this year.
I think that's fair. I think this is the strongest position Texas will face this year.
Yeah.
The D-line of opponents, more so than any other position. And I do think that that brings out the question of whether or not Texas is really going to have a, quote-unquote, Joe Moore award-winning offensive line. Right? Because they're going to go down the gauntlet, starting at Michigan. Michigan has two interior guys that are different, but very, very effective. Mason Graham is a quick as a cat guy, wrestler. If you want an Aaron Donald comparison or Byron Murphy comparison, that's Mason Graham. Maybe with more pass rush moves than Byron Murphy. Right. Kenneth Grant, the other defensive tackle, is the anchor. And he's going to be into the first round type of guy. Kind of if you want a comparison of those two, you might be looking at a Byron Murphy to Vondre Sweat type combo.
And Michigan has some young kids. There's a kid. Yep. He played a little bit as a freshman last year named Trey Pierce. And he's from Chicago. And some Texas fans may remember Texas offered him, tried to get him on campus. But he was locked in for so long with Michigan. But that kid's going to be big time too, I think. They have a couple of young D linemen at Michigan who are very good as well.
Overall, though, I think that is the strongest position Texas will face this year. And it's going to be directly opposite Texas and their situation at offensive line. So we'll see who comes out with it the best.
All right, we got another super chat. This one from Danny. Thank you, Danny. He says, I've been here from the beginning. Thank you guys for everything. Y'all are my favorite channel on YouTube and Hook'em.
Thanks, Danny.
Appreciate you, Hook'em.
All right, guys, this next question here is from Just the Dude. He says, is there an update of the Texas players that entered the portal and where they committed to? And is Red still uncommitted? Well, our CJ Vogel made this. I'm going to bring it up here for everybody to see. But do you have an answer on Red, guys?
Yeah, Terrence Brooks is Illinois now. I've not heard on Red. I haven't either.
I haven't either. Samaje Burrell's got some legal entanglements right now. Kirkland to Colorado, Billy Walton to SMU, Jamon Tapp and Zach Swanson to Arizona State. Terrence Brooks, the only add-on there to Jerry's point. I'm trying to think, do we know if Kendrick Blackshear ended up back at SMU?
No, I think I've heard UTSA is involved with a couple of those guys, but we'll see. I don't know. By the way, I think Jamon Tapp and Swanson are going to have really good years for Arizona State. I think both those guys pick really good schools for them. I think both those guys are going to help Arizona State a lot on the field this year. And I'm not saying Arizona State's going to have a good team necessarily. I'm saying those two guys pick schools that are going to allow them to ascend on the field a little bit.
All right. Our next question here is about our tight end room. And Christopher Weatherford says, you got any good intel on it? Is Gunnar Helm a draftable guy? Is that room a plus this year? Or do you feel like it's a liability?
I definitely don't think it's a liability. I think it's a question whether or not it's going to be a plus. Gunnar Helm is kind of a you know what you get guy. You've already seen enough of him. What do they call it? WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. That's the acronym. I'm a big believer in him as a low-end draft pick, 5th, 6th, 7th round guy. Not because I think he's going to be a tremendous NFL player, but I just think that he's continuing to improve each and every year. And when you have that continual improvement, you're going to end up in the right spot. And that's what he's done for himself. He's fairly athletic and gifted, but everything wasn't just given to him on a silver platter. He's worked for what he's got. I think that it's in really good hands if Amari Nyblack, this is the opportunity for it to become a plus position group, is Amari Nyblack's emergence and if he gets a little bit stronger this offseason. I think he's got to get a little bit stronger. He's really good in the pass game. Can he play in line? Can he be an H-back? That's a question. And then below him, Spencer Shannon's ahead of Will Randall, but Jordan Washington, guys, is going to be a dude. Now, I don't know how big a dude, and I don't know if he's – like, if you're projecting out, Jordan Washington's a possible second, third-round draft pick long-term, right? That's how good he is. And so I think it's in good hands. I think it's in good hands. I think it has a chance to be a plus position this year if Nyblack takes another step forward.
Yeah, so I'm a little different. I think tight end's going to be better this year than it was last year. I think Helm, a year older, I think Nyblack moves like a wide receiver at the tight end position. I think he's going to make as many big plays as JT Sanders did, but in a different way. JT Sanders got Quinn killed last year against Houston, so – If Nyblack's the same blocker that JT Sanders is, it's a wash there. I don't think Amari Nyblack's going to be a plus blocker, but I think the depth is going to be better. I think Gunnar Helm is a final year player, and I think he'll play in the NFL. But I think Nyblack's going to be a big weapon for Sark. I really do. I think he just moves, man. I mean, he moves like a wide receiver. He is going to scare defensive coordinators with his speed, his ability to take it to the house. I mean, he's good. JT Sanders, very good player, right? Should be a good player in the NFL if he puts the work in and wants to maximize his talent. But Nyblack scares you with his speed. There's a different, like, whoa, when that guy's running down a football field at the tight end position. I think Texas is going to be really good at tight end. I'll say this, Nyblack, Bobby, we saw him in person. He's strong for his frame. Because, exactly. I mean, he was more of a – and he'll add to that this year, but he's going to be a when the NFL Combine comes around, I guarantee you he'll do more than 8 reps at 225.
Here's my take on it, and this is the problem that I have. When you say it's going to be better, J.C. Sanders was a 2-year starter, yep. Understood the offense,
yep.
Knew where to be, knew the intricacies of it a little bit, played heady, I thought JT did largely. Wasn't necessarily the best blocker, but generally speaking, played smart football. Okay. That's where I don't know if Nye Black is going to be in the same category, especially not out of the gate, because Tommy Reese's offense is not similar to Steve Sarkisian's.
Right.
And it takes a little bit more. And it's something I heard that he was having issues with from time to time.
Yeah.
So I'm not where you're at right now, Jerry, to be fair, about it being a better position. I think it might be more explosive. I don't know if it'll be better because of that little nuance about knowing the offense, et cetera.
Okay, y'all, we got another super chat here from UT Boys. Thank you, UT Boy, once again. He says, Jonte is on a mission. Jonte Cook, obviously. So thank you for that, UT Boy.
I'm guessing he doesn't mean Mormon mission.
I would assume not.
UT Boy, you'd be in trouble if Jonte went away for 2 years to a mission.
All right, guys, we got time for just one or two more questions. And this is an interesting question, or an interesting fact more than anything. The Green Lantern. If the 6A state UIL 4x1 relay teams had run in the Big Ten track championships, they would have placed first, third, fifth, and sixth. Why is Texas high school track so good?
They care.
Train year round. I mean, yeah. Look, it's the summer track programs are really good in Texas, your AAU track programs. I mean, they're really good in Texas. I'll tell you this, there's a big difference. We talk about it, but Texas and Florida, and it's important now because Texas is recruiting in Florida so much. They're such interesting states to compare. We do it in football, but for track as well. Texas cares about track. They train year-round. They have really, really good summer track programs. Look, the setup also, I mean, and these guys, a lot of these guys are in football, but, you know, you have a year-round athletic period. So even the kids that are just in track year-round have an athletic period every day of high school during the season. During a school year, that makes a big difference just from a training consistency and training standpoint. And then there's the fact that, look, Texas has great athletes. I mean, as well. I think you put it all together. But the number one, like Bobby said, they care. You have great summer track programs. The other thing is where the state of Texas is really strong. We had Nathan Daughtry up here from Cruel Fitness, who Phil Samy. Zena, Riley Pettijohn, those guys have trained with him for 2-3 years. We have really good developmental S&C guys in the state of Texas that help push the Texas high school athletes, Bobby. I mean, we're really strong in the state of Texas in that regard too. It's not talked about much, but it's a strength in the state.
Well, I think that you have guys, you also have, this isn't a new thing. So, and what I mean by that is Texas has been a track state for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And so you have guys like Cedric Griffin who go back and Cedric Griffin doesn't coach football. He right. coaches track. I mean, that says something. These guys like track. They have good setups. Other kids like it. They see it as a way to get a scholarship. I feel like Texas, Florida, and California are the three states. The Midwest is, I mean, look, half their track season gets called off because it's snowing in early March.
Yeah, there's not year-round training there.
You know, it's now Pennsylvania has had some track folks, but also you see more middle distance runners,
right?
In the Big Ten, the thing about the Big Ten and track in general, as you guys may or may not know, track has a limited number of scholarships it can give. And what they'll do is the Big Ten and teams like that will not give the scholarships to the sprinters. they'll give it to the middle distance and long distance runners, as opposed to primarily the sprinters, which in Texas, you're going to give it to the sprinters and maybe some guys in the discus and shot. So it's a little bit different how they manipulate their team scholarship numbers. That plays a definitive role.
All right, y'all. We're going to take this question here from Jason Hernandez. He says, with the rise of Miami and Florida State, is that going to make it more difficult for Texas to go after players there? Obviously, it's going to impact the other schools that used to go into Florida.
I think that's a great question, and not because I used to live there and just were through there, but the state of Florida, much more wide open in recruiting than it's ever been. Because, one, look, just look back to the mid to late 90s in the state of Florida. Florida State, Miami, and Florida dominated college football, right? And look, Bobby Bowden, Steve Spurrier, everybody won national championships at those schools. Everybody did. And there's great talent coming out of state, great raw talent coming out of state. But some things have changed there in that state. Is once 7-on-7 got big and kids started from Dade and Broward County got out and started seeing the world, so to speak, it changed the perception of kids with Miami a little bit. Now, Miami's been on and off of probation, right? There's that part of it. But the facilities weren't comparative. The stadium, not comparative. A fan base is good, but, you know, look, it's a hit or miss fan base, right? It's a lot different when you go visit Alabama and Georgia and Tennessee and all those places. And that really opened up 7-on-7 and those programs declining at the same time, opened up that state recruiting. I mean, just think about, and this is why I'm getting to the point of why I think it's a great state to recruit for Texas now that they're in the SEC. Look at the players Georgia and Alabama have got out of Florida. Jerry Jeudy, I mean, just start. Just look at the receivers, right? There's been 4 first-round picks at receiver that Alabama got out of the state of Florida when Saban was there. You had Pat Surtain, who that's different. His dad's now at FSU, but Pat Surtain Jr., Bama. You had Tyson Campbell to Georgia, right? I mean, you just go look at the guys that have gone from the state of Florida out of state, just to Alabama and Georgia. They all got drafted. Essentially. But the state's good to recruit, and it's pocket areas. Dayton, Broward, I don't think Texas will have a lot of success in. That's kind of – you can dabble if there's a connection down there to somebody on your staff. But the Southwest Corridor, Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, those are the areas that I see and Space Coast, I see Texas could have success in. You got to cast the net, a pretty wide net, but those are the areas. And DeShore Choice has experienced years recruiting – Orlando and the Tampa area. Those are your areas where I think Texas can have success. Dade Broward, not really where you're going to spend a lot of time in recruiting down there. That's tougher. So when you look at Florida, kind of separate it in those areas following Texas in the future years. Tampa, Southwest Corridor, Orlando, Jacksonville, Space Coast. Those are the areas that I think Texas can have a lot of success. And that Jacksonville area bleeds into South Georgia, where I also think Texas can have success.
Okay, guys. Well, that's going to do it for today's edition of Coffee and Football, presented by John Donovan and Longhorn Wealth Management Group. We want to thank them, along with Manscaped, for sponsoring today's show. But, Bobby, before we get out of here, why don't you tell folks what we have going on over at OnTexasFootball.com right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Jerry had mentioned this. He posted something earlier today about guys that are trending Texas and then guys are sitting tight with Texas right now. I think that's an interesting article. Check that out on OnTexasFootball.com. Also, we're starting a master list of guys expected in for the June elite camp. Jerry started that as well. And then we've got the official visit list for guys coming in June as well. If you like recruiting, we got all kinds of stuff going on over on TexasFootball.com. We'll be back later today talking ball as well as the winning drive. Join the discussion with us if you can. Come on over to OnTexasFootball.com. That's where we're at when we're not doing videos here with you guys. Appreciate it very much.
That's right. And once again, we appreciate y'all's support. As Jerry said, going over 47,000 subscribers, as he said a little bit ago, that's just phenomenal. We couldn't do it without you guys. If you haven't already, be sure to hit that like and subscribe button. Ring the bell so you're notified anytime that we go live or post a video. That way you don't miss any content. And then, as Bobby said, head on over to OnTexasFootball.com for around-the-clock coverage. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Have a good week, guys.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
If your small business is booming, you might say,
cha-ching.
But you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help your growing business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.